today we get a chance to hear from Mariah Harkins. She is a sales officer, in fact, the senior sales officer at Lucrom. They are a private investment firm, and they have a private credit fund, and we'll get into more details about that in the episode. Personally, she's overcome a ton of adversity, and we get right into that in the beginning of the episode, and you'll hear a lot about that. Her mother left her and her brother and her father at age 4, and then her father put Mariah and her brother into a school to be raised, and so they did not really have parents in the traditional way. And so I think there are some abandonment issues that she talks about, and that's created some challenges and some strengths for her along the way. And she talks a lot about how that shaped her career path and her decision making, and maybe some of the ways that she approaches risk and diversification with investing and even relationships. But this is a really fantastic episode. Mariah is not really an entrepreneur. She does mention how she started a business and that didn't go well. She's a sales expert, a management expert that has 25 years plus of success in driving sales growth and securing customer loyalty, etc. We talk to both the active and passive real estate investor in this episode. We talk about raising capital and a couple of the key points there, some of the lessons that you can take and put into your business if you're an active real estate or active mortgage note investor, how you can focus on raising more capital. And also we speak to the passive investor and how to make decisions. It's not financial advice, but how to make decisions as far as where to place your capital. So this episode is all about sales. It's all about passive investing as well as active investing in the alternative space. And it's all about overcoming personal adversity and how that can shape your career and your life. You do not want to miss this episode.
From adversity to abundance, hosted by entrepreneur and seasoned real estate investor Jamie Bateman, is the ultimate guide for active and passive investors seeking clarity, mental fitness, and the confidence to make inspired decisions in the world of real estate. With a decade plus of investing experience across various niches and a background as a combat veteran, former Army officer, and multi-million dollar mortgage note company owner, Jamie brings a wealth of knowledge and inspiring stories to each episode. Through weekly episodes featuring insightful interviews with industry leaders and solo explorations of mindset and strategy, listeners will uncover actionable advice and tips to overcome challenges and build lasting financial success. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just starting, From Adversity to Abundance is your roadmap to turning obstacles into opportunities and achieving financial freedom.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the From Adversity to Abundance podcast. I am your host, Jamie Bateman, and today we have with us Mariah Harkins. She is the Chief Sales Officer at Lucrom. We're going to get into what she does specifically. Mariah, how are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you, Jamie?
I'm doing well. Yeah. Good. As a friend of mine says, the sun is shining, birds are chirping.
Yeah.
What could I ask for?
Yeah, exactly.
So it's a good day. It's a good day to be a real estate investor, a mortgage note investor, a capital raiser, a sales team leader. And let's dive into it. I know we were chatting a little bit beforehand. I'm excited about to hear both your story and then also about what you're up to today with raising capital and leading a sales team. Let's dive right into your backstory, Mariah. What you mentioned to me something about age 4. Let's go there.
Going way back, my parents got pregnant in high school with my brother. They had me the year after, so they were very young. My mom decided to leave when I was 4 years old. My brother was 5.
Wow.
That was, you know, something that was a major turning point in our life. I think my dad wasn't really in a position where he could raise kids alone. And so he put us into a school. For those on the East Coast, I don't know if you've ever heard of Milton Hershey School. So my brother and I entered the school. I was in second grade. He was in third grade. We graduated from there. It was a different upbringing because obviously you're being brought up by different people, not your parents. So that has provided some challenges, in my life in regard to the closeness of relationships in regard to that. But my brother and I put ourselves through college. We had some really good role models in our family. And so there really was not a question that we were going to go to college. So I feel really blessed that I had some good, folks that were successful in business that inspired me to want more,
Sure.
and position myself in the best possible way for that. I went
Yeah.
to school at University of Georgia.
Okay.
Had some family down there, which that was really nice experience to move from Pennsylvania to Georgia, quite a difference culturally.
Sure.
Then moved out to Arizona after college. I lived in San Francisco for a little while, got transferred back to Hartford, Connecticut, then
Okay.
back to Arizona. I'm in Seattle now, and I also have a place in Palm Springs, California. So, I feel like my background shaped me to want to go into business, specifically in finance. I really, at that point in time, it was a long time ago, really wanted to enter into a career space where I didn't really have a glass ceiling, which is, it's real today. It was definitely real then. And so, I started working with companies like Vanguard, on the mutual fund sales desk. That was my first job.
Okay.
Then I went to Charles Schwab. I went to Aetna for a little while. So I started my career with some very big companies, and I quickly understood that the way in which to really achieve and be able to experience abundance was to get into sales.
Okay.
Because if you're a woman or you're a man or you're a minority, typically your sales compensation is based on a salary, but most of it's commission. And
Sure.
so there is no, it's just whoever's the best at the job
Right.
is able to, achieve the goals and exceed the goals. There is no holding you back from success that you can have there.
Absolutely.
So, I entered sales probably in the early 2000s. I got promoted to manage a sales organization in 2002, and I've been doing that since. And it's really been all on the alternative investment space, passive investments with hard assets backing the investments, and lots of different asset classes. So I've got a lot of experience for folks that really believe that diversifying your assets across lots of different asset classes provides protection. Because different asset classes go through different periods of ups and downs. And that having some hard assets backing your investment, particularly real estate, is a really great strategy. And some people, have dove in and they've done it themselves in regard to flipping properties or
Sure.
buying into retail or office buildings.
Yeah.
And, I congratulate those folks. But
Yeah.
then there's others that, want to be able to experience the stability of the hard asset
Right.
backed investments, but really just are not in a position yet, or may never be, where they want to go out and do it on their own, but they want exposure to it. And there's lots of different ways to do that through funds and different structures that are out there for the investor.
Absolutely no. And I run a small fund, a mortgage note fund. Hopefully it does continue to grow. It's small currently. We're hoping for it to be larger as things move forward. But and I also do mentorship for more of the active investor. So to your point, there are many ways to skin the cat in real estate investing or just alternative investing in general. And what I've found is sometimes I'll mentor people and then they realize like, this is a lot of work. This takes a lot of time. And then it's like, hey, can you just, they'll essentially say, can you take my money and make me more of it? And, obviously, typically for the passive investor, they're going to get a little bit of a lower return, all things, other things being, equal. But there are many ways to make money in real estate investing and alternative investing. But I do find that many people end up, you know what? Let's just go make me some money, and that works out well for all parties involved. Not always, and a key there is who is the operator, what's their track record, and things like that. And we can get into all that. But let's dive just briefly back on your story, and then we'll get more into, what you're doing today. But this really comes down to how vulnerable you want to be. But what type of, I mean, your mother left and your father put you into a school, you and your brother into a school. And so you're essentially raised not by your parents. I mean, I honestly can't even fathom that. I mean, it's just very outside of how I was raised and how, most people were raised, even those raised by a single parent. So what type of pain were you feeling at that time, and what lessons came out of that for you?
Well, I think, if you put vulnerable children in a situation like that, it does strain your relationship. I don't have a relationship with my mom. She left and never came back. My relationship is strained with my father because I think he was young and he wanted his freedom. But I had relatives that could and wanted to take care of us, and he did not want that to happen because he wanted his freedom.
I see.
And so, I think what I have learned from that is that I have a, I think any child in this situation, my brother and I, and all of the kids in that school have some level of abandonment issues. And so I think the way that that translated into my future job choices, as well as the fact that I'm more of a passive investor in real estate, I have dabbled into, and we can talk about it with my house in Palm Springs, but I seek, I take risks, but they're very calculated. I admire people tremendously that are really entrepreneurial, but I think based on the fact that I had to fend for myself for so long, thank God I have my brother. Because we're very, very close. And I don't know how my life would look without having him. We went through everything together. But it is one of these things where as you get older and you have family members that you're close to, or really good friends that become your family, you create your own family. And so you can go through life in regard to a lot of people that went to that school, they never went to college. They really struggled. There's a lot of people that really struggled. And there's probably, I would say, 5 to 10% that have done really well for themselves. So in that case, you can either take a victim mentality, and you can blame all of life's challenges, on that, your childhood,
For sure.
where you had disadvantages, or you can make it your superpower because you are a survivor and you become very resilient. And when you're thrown challenges in life, which I have been thrown some challenges in life that others may crumble, I just view it as I am always going to be okay. And from personal relationship standpoints, somebody that is fiercely independent really never feels like I know I can depend on people, but I don't want to depend on people. I want to make sure I'm always in a position to take care of myself.
Got
So
it.
there's good and bad to that. It's you have to be a really great communicator in relationships because you need other people, but maybe not in a way that they are fulfilled to feel needed. So, it's an interesting journey, but I have been incredibly blessed. I've gone through some rough patches in my career through different market cycles. I just am proud of myself that I always typically land on my feet because I approach the business with a lot of integrity. And sometimes you can't always control the outcome of certain things based on concentrations, market cycles.
Sure, there are
You
a lot of
learn tough
factors.
lessons.
Absolutely, for sure.
The longer you're in this business, you go through cycles and you really do learn some tough lessons, but it just makes you stronger and have, a more balanced approach as you go into life into the future.
Absolutely. And the thing is, and I'm not putting down any of the other challenges you've ever faced, or that you may face in the future, or that anyone else has faced. But having been through that in your childhood, I can imagine that if you lose, if you don't get someone to sign up for an investment, like if you don't get a family office to sign up that you were looking to sign up. That's not quite as as challenging as what you've already been through, right? So it's like, okay, big deal, you know.
Just moving
So
on.
move on. So I
Find
mean,
someone else.
yeah, I mean, and so and I love the fact that you said you really can. I mean, the truth is you would be warranted at looking at your past through a victim mindset. I mean, because you were a victim, you know. It's like you weren't, it wasn't something you chose to have happen to you, the abandonment and whatnot. So, but is that helpful to continue looking at it that way? Is that going to help you in your own, you know, your own journey? What would you say to that?
Yeah, I just feel like if you have the mindset that if you allow what others did to you to impact your future, you're giving them too much power.
I love that. That's
You
really
know, and
great.
you're just living within that negativity where you can turn it around to say, I learn from the mistakes of others. I won't make those mistakes myself. But I'm going to live the best life that I can live because that empowers me to say, regardless, I made this great life for myself. If you want to be a part of it, we have some things to work through, or you're just not a part of it. That's been the hardest part, with some therapy and everything. The hardest part is I think one of the things about me that is great is I'm very generous and compassionate and forgiving, almost to a fault, though. I give people a lot of chances, and there's been times where you have to recognize if you're giving people chances, but it's leading to a toxic relationship, and that it's hard sometimes with close family members that sometimes you have to let it go and create your own family. And that's a really, really hard thing. I think for abandoned children especially, they always seek that level of approval from their parents. And you go through life expecting that this time it's going to be different. And it never is. And so you keep going through that, and you experience a lot of heartache from that to the point where you finally reach a point where you're like, okay, this is toxic.
This is
So
a
I've
different issue.
created my own family through great family members and friends, and you have to be okay with that.
That's really good. That thank you for walking us through that and talking about that. And before we dive into more specifics about what you do today, talk about some of the abundance. I mean, you've touched on it a little bit, but some of the abundance that you're living in, you mentioned you've created your own family through friends and other maybe more extended family members, but maybe that's financial abundance, relationship abundance. Talk about some of the abundance that you've been able to experience, even though some of that has been outside of your control, but talk about some of the abundance that you're living in today.
I think it's really interesting, like in your early career, like I'm so happy that I had inspiration from family to like want a better life, and that meant going to college. And then to try to choose a career where I would have more opportunities and not be held back because of gender or whatever. It's gotten a lot better. I think back then it was a serious concern. You sort of had to really think about which career path do I want to take here. And I was incredibly fortunate that, my dad ended up being pretty successful in life. He was in sales. And I recognized pretty early on that I started my career in service and operations, and I managed big teams. And then I was dating a guy at the time, and he was a financial products wholesaler. And I looked at him and I go, I can do that. And so it went from like he was making a lot of money, a lot more than I was working equally as hard. So then you just decide, okay, if I have these skills, if you don't have sales skills, it's the hardest job in the world. Like you were saying, like if you get rejected from a family office that doesn't want to do business with you, like me, you just move on, and you're gonna, as long as you got a lot of firms in the pipeline, some are gonna say yes, some are gonna say no. But like If you've got the skills, sales is typically something where you have no limits in
Sure.
regard to what you can make of your life. And I admire people greatly that are entrepreneurs, because the entrepreneurs are the ones that end up making billions.
Right.
But most of those people, there are self-made people, but most of those people actually grew up in well-connected, wealthy families, so they
Sure.
actually got a really good
Yeah,
start.
that's true.
Like if you're
I don't
if
really
you're
believe in the self-made thing, to be honest with you, but I mean, it happens, I guess. I mean, but even those people had some type of advantage or
Yeah,
something.
it's totally like you look at Bill Gates' daughter who's starting, some clothing online search tool, and her dad's going in and he's gonna do some customer service work. He's gonna sit on the desk. It's just like you've got this mentor, and then you probably have $10 million to get you started, kind of thing, But I admire people greatly that have the ability to be entrepreneurial. Unfortunately for me, I have chosen the right career path. It's been really lucrative for me, and I've been able to have an abundant life because I don't have to worry about money in the same way that others do. But I also am really honest about the fact that I have tried at one point in my career to start my own business, and I just felt like I am so much more comfortable with le less anxiety when I'm working for somebody
Yeah,
else.
there's it's not easy, and there's I mean, most businesses fail. I mean, for sure, not even it's not even close to 50-50. And you know, there's I there's no one size fits all to real estate investing or investing in general. There's no one size fits all to, you know, as far as a path to financial success at all. And you know, we do have a lot of entrepreneurs who listen to the show, but this is not I in many ways, try you know, tell people not to be an entrepreneur because it is not for the faint of heart. And also, there are seasons in life, and it's not you don't have to decide at age 20 that I'm going to be an entrepreneur for the rest of my
Totally.
life.
I
Or,
know.
you know, it's like you can change paths, and that's okay along the way. So, I mean, again, there are many, many paths to success. So, as far as our listener goes, we do have both active and passive real estate and mortgage note investors. One thing I like to reiterate to people is that, so I'm a mortgage note investor primarily, and you know, this can apply to other real estate investing and even other business models for sure. But there's essentially three legs to the stool that we kind of focus on, and that's finding deals. So finding notes to buy, that's one of them, buying the notes themselves, buying the assets. And the second one is raising capital or finding money, right, to go buy those notes. And then the third piece is managing those really two other legs of the stool. And there are other ways you could frame that, of course. And I like to just call that asset management or, you know, capital and asset management. But I mean, one of the big legs is raising capital. And so whether you're even if you're more of an active investor and you just want to do this, whether you want to do this at scale or not, you're going to run out of your own money that you have allocated to invest. And so you're going to need access to other people's money, whether that's bank money or private capital and whatnot. So, you know, it's a very lim can be a very limiting factor if you're trying to scale your business. So as a speak to the mortgage note investor or the private lender out there who wants to scale, and wants to raise capital. I know you've been successful at, you know, leading sales teams and raising capital yourself. What are, you know, just one or two things, pieces of advice that you would give to the active investor who wants to raise capital?
So at Lucram, so Thomas McPherson, he started, it's interesting. He came out of the military and he wanted to get rich quick. And so he took out margin accounts, started investing in the stock market, started doing pretty well until the market crashed. And then, he was making $20,000 a year and he was $70,000 in debt. So he made a decision really early on that level of risk taking, which is gambling
Yeah.
in a lot of ways, you know, that he wanted to do. He wanted to get into real estate. He thought the stability of real estate,
Yeah.
the fact that over the long run, the returns are really good.
Sure.
If you diversify, if you have the ability to diversify,
Yeah.
you can really withstand almost any, you know, up and down.
Yeah.
I would always say, just because I'm from financial services and I've learned about so many different types of asset classes,
Sure.
you know, the hard asset backed investments like a real estate fund,
Yep.
investing in real estate as an individual, you know, there's some oil and gas
Yeah.
investments, land investments. You can go into private equity where they're investing in companies.
Sure.
Like lots of different ways that you can invest. Diversification is critical. If you're in real estate and you decide that you are a real estate flipper
Right.
in Phoenix, Arizona,
Right.
and that's all you do is residential in one market, the chances are if there is a really challenging market cycle where interest rates go up like they are right now and it's really tough to get acquired debt at a decent rate, so it
Right.
shrinks, you know, your ability, because also home sales are slower because people are
Sure.
stuck in 2%, 3% mortgages and they don't want to
Right.
sell their homes, even if they aspire to like buy a new home
Sure.
and move. So, you know, that's one thing
Yeah.
where I just feel like investments in general, having a diversified mix across different asset classes, but then even if you're in real estate, considering diversification across different types of real estate or different markets.
Sure.
Because, you know, one metro market might get hit for different reasons. Others are more resilient. Like
Yeah.
Phoenix, when it got hit in, you know, 08 and at different periods,
Yeah.
you know, they have really, really strong focus in their commerce departments of bringing global businesses into Phoenix.
Okay.
There's a housing shortage. So, like, if
Sure.
you're in a really, really pro business metro market,
Yeah.
more resilient to market downturns because there's a continuous need for residential real estate. So
Sure,
if you
that makes
don't
sense.
have the ability as an individual investor, like if you flip houses and that's your skill, and you're like, I'm just not like expert enough in commercial, you
Right.
know, retail, office buildings, like this is what I know. Really
Sure.
focusing on metro markets that have continued growth and are attracting businesses from all over the world, I think is
Yeah.
critical.
Sure.
As far as raising money, you know, Thomas went into real estate. He became a broker, I believe, when he was pretty young. Then he decided he's very entrepreneurial, so then he went into distressed debt.
Okay.
So he
Yep.
developed a couple of distressed debt funds and, you know, made a killing. Like he did really,
Yeah.
really well in regard to that.
Right. And to the
And
listener,
he
this
mentors a
was.
lot of people too that do
Gotcha.
that.
Okay. Just very quickly, because it's, we buy distressed debt, first lien
Yep.
mortgage notes,
Yeah.
non-performing. Just to the listener who may not be familiar with that, distressed debt generally is where you're buying the debt, you're becoming the lender or the bank that on already originated notes. Where the borrower is not paying, or if they are, they're way behind. So that's a whole separate discussion. So what around when was that? Do you know when that was
So I think
approximately?
he went into it probably like right around, you know, 08,
Yeah,
you
gotcha.
know, which was really tough time, but really
Right.
lucrative if you're in
For
that
sure.
distressed debt, you know, and running funds.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you
Yeah.
get it. I think for him, you know, he started Lucrum almost 3 years ago.
Okay.
And, you know, and we'll get back to this money raising thing, but I think because he went through a market where he had to be that guy, because you're stepping in, you know, and people aren't paying your mortgage, their
Right.
mortgages, you know, in relation to the real estate. And I think he made the decision that even though he made a lot of money in it, he really wanted to go more the private credit route.
Okay.
So he started Lucrum to start a private credit fund where we do short-term loans, so six to
Yeah.
12 months. Not much can go wrong in 6 to 12 months.
Yeah, true.
And it's typically a bridge or someone's got a short-term real estate project. They want to flip a home. It's going to be a 6 to 12 month project. Or they're bridging because they really want to get a piece of real estate. Bank financing takes longer. So, that, and only lending to high credit quality businesses, you're in a first lien position. But typically, we have repeat borrowers. And even if they ran into an issue, because we're in a first lien and we keep our loan to values in the 50s,
Gotcha. Yeah, you're
we
in a
can take
pretty
that real
safe
estate, but
position.
we really want to work with them. We've run into very few situations, but it's really wanting to work with the borrower so that they get to keep the real estate and we get, our loan paid off. So, he made that decision to go that route. And so, for the first, it took probably a year to establish a company, hire people, and then they started raising money about 2 years ago and raised probably about $11 million through friends and family and then referrals of friends and family. And so, what I would say for those that are wanting to seek investments, they're going to go to their friends and family and they're going to trust you. So
That's
you better
exactly
do a darn good job and you better have tremendous confidence in yourself and your business strategy before you go out to your friends and your family because they may not look super deeply and they trust
that's true.
you. So that trust is critical. So until you feel really confident what you've started as far as your real estate business, you have to be careful about going to friends and family. If you're super confident, and you've got a lot of your own money in it, then go out to your friends and family and then they'll give you referrals. And that's how our company started raising
No,
money.
that's really good. And just to piggyback on that, and ours is a smaller fund, but I've found the same thing to be true. Well, first off, I couldn't agree more that you should put your own capital at play in some way, shape, or form, or whether that's, or at least have years of experience before you start asking for money from other investors, even if it's not friends and family, even if it's all accredited investors that you don't have a relationship with. I still recommend people have their own skin in the game, have experience,
Oh,
and
yeah.
for sure, and build those, put in the reps to build the competence to then produce that confidence that you were just talking about
Yes.
to go out and raise capital. And that's what I did, and that's what we continue to do. And the other point I wanted to make is I found that as much as we market and try to put things out there and all that, and as far as for our fund and that kind of thing, by far the most fruitful path to new capital for us has been repeat investors.
Yeah.
No question about it. And that's
And
because,
referrals.
and referrals, people that they know for sure. It's word of mouth and sales, which is your
Yeah.
area of expertise. But they've been happy with the results, and so they put more capital in, or
Yeah.
they tell a friend about it, right? And they put capital in. It's somebody
Yes.
I didn't market to. It's somebody that they
Yeah.
told. And so for sure, I think that's really, really powerful. And then so you came on board in January, you
I
said.
did.
How has it gone since then?
Well, so, they successfully raised money through friends and family and referrals of friends and family. They did some high net worth lead generation through companies that promise you that they're going to get you high net worth investors by advertising on Facebook and Instagram. And we found that that isn't a successful way in which to get leads. And the company probably spent a decent amount of money that was wasted money because the leads that we got, people click on stuff, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they're interested.
That's
So we
true.
got to a point where they made a decision. My expertise is helping companies raise money by networking and educating financial advisors. So whether they're a registered investment advisor or work for a broker-dealer, we're educating them because if I educate them and they say, oh, this is great, they can sell it to 20 of their clients.
That's super
And then you
powerful.
1,000 of them and they're selling it to 20 of their clients. You can imagine how that
Right.
takes time to build that, and
Sure.
it's more expensive, much more expensive than going direct
Right,
to
right.
try to get high net worth individuals to come directly to you.
Right.
But it's when you know, our fund's a $250 million fund. There's no way you're getting to that
No.
typically with referrals from your high net worth,
For
friends and
sure.
family.
Right.
And so, they hired me for my expertise because that's what I do. It's my Rolodex, it's the firm level broker dealer or RIA that's got, 50 people working for them, or a broker dealer that might have 500 people under that umbrella. So the broker dealer agrees, I like the product, they've done due diligence, we're going to
Yeah.
put it on our platform. Then you start to wholesale, which you're going out with your sales team to educate then the advisors underneath the firms that have blessed it.
Okay.
So, for us, there's no way that we would get to scale without doing that. And so we're building that, and that takes time to build it. It's
Sure.
we are competing against private credit funds that do a similar business as we do, that
Right.
have been in business for 20 years, that have billions of dollars under management. And so how do you differentiate yourself
Sure.
from all of the other competition? And that's, it's been a learning experience for sure. The one thing that Lucrum does that I think is unique, and I've never seen it before, is we have four classes of shares,
Okay.
and they're based on certain minimums. Like Class A is 50,000,
Okay.
Class B is 500,000, Class C is 1 million, and they pay different preferred
Return.
return
Yeah.
rates.
Right.
Then we have Class D, and that's only for our advisory board, our executives, and our employees. And we have about a little over $3.5 million invested in that. So almost all of our employees, or a good portion of our employees, all of our executives are invested in our fund. In Class D is subordinate to Class A, B, and C, which means we take the first loss.
I see.
That 3.5 million is at risk, that if there's ever a situation where we can't pay our fixed preferred return,
Right.
or the client wants their money out and their principal that they invested is not the same, it's gone down,
Right.
we make that up so the investor doesn't experience a loss until we've gone through that 3.5 million.
I see.
And our goal is to keep that. It's a lot more than 10% right now, but even as we grow, it will always be our targets at least 10% of the fund. So you see, what's really critical for those that want to be passive investors.
Right.
Look, we talked about skin in the game,
Right.
where if you're going to go out and raise money, you better have your own skin in the game.
Right.
Ask, when you're talking to principals, how much money do you have invested in your own deal?
Sure. Yeah,
You
absolutely.
know, it's like if you're talking to, in my world, if my salespeople are going out and they're trying to get you as a financial advisor to sell this to 50 of your clients, my question to them are you invested in the deal?
Right, absolutely.
Because if you're, even if they're, we would allow an employee to invest $10,000. If they're invested in the deal and they're investing what they want to invest in it shows a level of confidence and belief in the company and the
Absolutely.
longevity of the company.
Right.
It's really critical when you get to know principals of firms. Are they resilient? Are they survivors? Are
Right.
they persistent? Like, if things go bad,
Right.
can they, are they going to give up?
Yeah. Have they weathered storms before?
Right.
Like I know you have in
Yeah.
your personal and professional life. And yeah, that just aligns interests for sure. Because the storms are going to come, as far
Yes.
as investing or personal or whatever. But I couldn't agree more. I mean, that's why, I mean, the truth is, if you're going from, I guess one of the, you could say it's one of the downsides or one of the things you're giving up if you're going from being an active investor to be more of a passive investor. You're giving up a lot of control. You're giving up a lot of, you're putting a lot of faith into those principals, those
Yes.
operators, right? So it just, and it makes sense. I mean, you can't have everything, right?
Right.
You can't have all the control, but also not do any work and make all
Yeah.
the high returns. So there's a, that's a critical piece. So talk to the more passive investor who is, I guess, they have capital. I've got, just say, 100 grand I want to put to work, and I like the idea of a private credit fund or a mortgage
Yep.
note fund, but I don't really know where to start. Maybe I Google and there's like 10 companies that come up. How do I start evaluating these companies?
Yeah, so I mean, it's a little easier if you've got a financial advisor
Sure,
because they're
that's
doing the
true.
research for you and they're
Right.
educating you on the
Right.
options that are out there. You know, I think diversification is so important. You know, most people have, and you have to look at your entire portfolio, your 401k, if you've got an IRA, your investable assets that you've got outside of your retirement accounts. And you have to really look at, okay, how have I spread that around into stocks and bonds? Now I want some hard assets to diversify, which is critical because you can go into a traded REIT, it's going to move with the big fluctuations and volatility in the stock market. It's
Right,
not
that's a good
going to
point.
act like a real estate investment. It's going
Sure.
to act like a stock. And so when you see major market volatility, everything moves with that. So there's some major advantages to non-traded private investments, like your fund, like our fund. The other critical thing for anybody that is a real estate investor, really understanding DSTs and 1031 exchanges. You
Okay,
know,
can you?
and it's just something if you are a rental real estate owner, like you need to talk to someone to provide education, or you can get, you know, use ChatGPT to provide
I was just thinking that.
education for that, because a 1031 is you've got very really tight timelines. And there are a lot of 1031 product sponsors that are out there where you need to have lots of choice.
Got
So
it.
before you decide that you're going to sell a piece of real estate to buy something else, or you've just decided, I don't like the tenants, the trash, like having to manage this. And so now I want to go into a 1031 exchange that is managed by a professional company. That might a DST that might have 16 properties in it, so you get diversification. So to anyone, you know, whether you go into your own property, you want to continue to manage and you trade into another property to defer your taxes, or you've decided, I'm just done with this and I want to just go into a fund, I just would say for any real estate investor, you have to know what a DST is and you've got to know what a 1031 exchange is.
Sure, that's good
And then when
advice.
it comes down to, you know, I think you've got a financial advisor that can teach you about all the different options that are out there for you to go into these types of things. You know, the internet today and AI, you know, if you're looking for something in a certain metro market, you know, there's just something that you're looking for in a passive investment, you can usually go in and prompt AI to say, this is what I'm looking for. Send me the 10 best funds that are focused on residential real estate in the Phoenix metro market, you know, and learn how to prompt AI, because it's amazing what it will spit out in relation to
Absolutely.
you having to try to figure it out on your own. Let AI gather all of that information based on the criteria of what you're looking
Yeah,
for.
that's really good. For some reason, I took a break from using AI for a little bit there, and I all of a sudden it was twice as good as it
Yeah.
had been. And yeah, I just didn't quite appreciate the skill set that the value of the skill set of prompt writing and really telling ChatGPT or whichever platform you're using, okay, this is who you are, this is the perspective I want you to
Yeah.
answer this from. And it's just been really, really helpful in our business and in my own personal life. But that's really good. So, okay, so diversification is something I keep hearing from you, I guess having experience and just also seeking the advice of experts. I mean, you mentioned
Yeah.
financial advisors. Anything else you want to add to, as far as advice for either the capital raiser out there or the passive investor who's trying to
Yeah.
raise capital?
So if you feel like you have good diversification in your overall portfolio, your retirement accounts, your non-retirement accounts, and you've got $100,000 to invest, and you are not yet a passive investor, spread that out. Invest in three different funds.
No,
Don't
that
put it
makes
all in one, because you know there's safety in that.
sense.
You know, you are insulating yourself by investing in lots of different asset classes. to protect yourself. So if you really like private credit, look at three different funds. Narrow it
Right.
down to three and invest in each of those. Because then you're, if one of them goes bad, you've invested 30,000 in it, not $100,000 in it.
Right. Makes sense.
I think that diversification is really important. And if you feel like you're really diversified and you've got $100,000 and it's just a piece of your diversification strategy, going into one is fine. But
Sure.
you know, I'm a true believer that diversification protects you from unexpected market movements.
Yeah, which will occur, right? Nobody
Yeah.
has a crystal ball. So before we hit some rapid fire questions, your private credit fund at Lucrum, is that, can you talk a little bit more about the types of deals that you have in that fund?
Yeah.
Is that what type, what does that mean? Like, what's a bridge loan? What's private
Yeah,
credit?
sure. So, you know, private credit, it's really interesting. It can mean so many different things.
Yeah.
So, private credit can mean that a company is investing in companies that are private that can't get bank financing. You
Got it.
know, or it can mean that private credit is companies like ours making loans out to businesses focused on real estate. So they're either purchasing real estate, they're developing real estate, or they're improving real estate. And
Got
so
it.
our
Okay.
focus is a bridge loan just means you found a piece of real estate, you love it. If you want to go out and get bank financing, it could take a couple of months and you'll
Sure.
lose that property.
True.
So you might go to a private lender and they might be able to close that deal in days. And so you're going to pay more interest than you would
Sure.
on your bank loan.
Right, but you get
But
the
if you've
deal.
got a short-term project,
Yeah.
you might, you know, want to just do that if you've
Sure.
got enough of a spread of what you think you can earn on it versus what you're putting into it, and you
Right.
factor in interest from a private lender. You know, for short-term projects, it makes a lot of sense. But for a lot of people, it's they locate and really need this real estate for something in their business or their life. And they will take a loan from Lucra maybe for 6 months. And then they'll put permanent financing in, they'll pay off the loan, and then they've got a lower cost source of financing. So that bridging is a big part of private lending because private lenders typically can do their due diligence quickly and they might be able to close a deal in 3 days. Where you might go to a bank and it could take 3 months and you've lost that piece of real estate.
Sure, makes sense.
So, you know, what we're doing is we're going out and doing tons of research, mostly in the Phoenix metro market. We're based in Phoenix.
Yeah.
We're in other high growth metro markets, but we're experts. We've got repeat borrowers.
Yeah.
We work with brokers so that if we don't have money to fund a loan, but it's a really great loan, we'll broker it and get a brokerage fee
Got it.
by, you know, having locating somebody else to do the loan.
Sure.
And so we focus on LTVs that are somewhere in like the mid 50s. So like right now, I think our average is 53%. And what that means for a novice in real
Yeah.
estate is that if you are lending somebody $1 million, or no, you're lending somebody money to purchase $1 million property,
Right.
we're going to give them $530,000. It's going to be
Got
a
it.
6 to 12 month loan. We're going to average about 12% on that loan. We're going to get some fees associated with doing the loan. But, you know, they're going to pay that loan. It's going to be paid off in 6 to 12 months. If something were to happen and they just stopped paying their loan payments, we
Yeah.
have a first lien on that $1 million
Right,
property.
right, right.
So you can
That's
imagine if you have low LTVs,
right.
the chances of that business not doing everything possible in their power to make sure that loan's paid off and
Right.
someone doesn't take my $1 million property for a
Right.
$530,000
Yeah.
loan. So, you know, in private credit, it's really important to look at the longer term the loans, the more risk there is.
Sure.
The
That makes
higher
sense.
the loan to value, the
Yeah.
more risk there is.
Right.
Because there's more risk long term that things could go wrong. The higher the LTV,
Yeah.
even if you acquired that property back at a 90% LTV, all the fees associated and that lag of trying to do something with that property
Right.
are going to put you underwater as
Sure.
a lender.
Now I
So
imagine too, if you're
just it's a feeling really comfortable with the principals,
Yeah, for
making
sure.
sure they have their own skin in the game. If they're in a first loss position, that's even better.
Right.
But like making sure you just really understand what private credit means in regard
Right.
to what type of fund that you're looking at.
Makes sense. And I know oftentimes there are extension fees, like if they haven't paid off the loan in
Yep.
12 months, they can possibly extend for another 6 months.
Exactly.
The borrower is probably paying 2 or 3% to Lucrom in this example.
Yes.
And then that only helps protect the passive investor as well. And other fees along the way, there's probably a much higher default interest rate if the borrower does fall behind as well. So
Yes.
there's always risk in all of these asset classes. We never say there's, a risk-free investment or anything,
Yes.
but relatively speaking, the first lien debt space tends to be certainly on the lower risk end of the spectrum. Would you agree with that?
I totally agree. And I think the shorter term the loans are, that's protective as well. You
Sure.
know, but if you're looking at, a company that focuses on high quality lenders,
Yeah.
short term, first lien position, low
Right.
LTVs, you're going to be on the lower end of the spectrum and you may want to take more risk. If you see somebody that's paying, like our rates are between 8 and 9, depending on how much you invest, there's
Yeah.
some tax advantages because we have a REIT structure that underlies it.
Okay.
And you can reinvest, so that can up
Yeah,
your
compound your
returns
interest.
to about 10.5%.
Okay. Yeah.
But if someone comes to you and says, we have a private credit fund that pays you 12%, you better look deeply
Sure.
into the level of risk. And it's
Right.
fine if you want to have low risk and high
Right.
risk, but do two funds,
Right.
balance that out a bit,
No.
because the risk reward spectrum is wide.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's something that just unfortunately it's very easy for operators and fund managers to throw up whatever they want to on a pro forma and say, hey, we're targeting 21% ROI for you. And it's like it's very easy to put that on a piece of paper, but why is that? I mean, I think in our space, we're not competing ultimately, with the oil and gas or the potentially more speculative
Right.
higher end higher yield producing asset classes, and that's not where we are, but there are many
Right.
advantages to what the asset class that we're in
Yes.
that they can't offer. So, and there's no right or wrong. To your point, there's no right or wrong. It's like everyone's in a different position. You may have different goals, different
Yeah,
experiences, different
absolutely.
amount of capital to invest, and this may not be the right investment for you at this
Yeah,
time. That's okay.
exactly.
So awesome. We've got some rapid fire questions and we got to wrap up and get out of here. This has been really good. Mariah, if you could have coffee or a drink with any historical figure, whom would you choose?
Queen Elizabeth.
Okay, why is that?
I just think it would be like so, I'm really into historical fiction, especially in the royal periods. I've learned a lot
Nice.
about, I just think historical fiction's great because it's so entertaining. But like, I just feel like the whole, just the royals, how they live in a world that we don't even understand.
Right.
I
It's
mean, I'm sure it
fascinating.
would be incredibly formal.
Right.
And all kinds of rules I have to learn before I sit down there and have tea with her, but I just think it
Right,
would
right.
be fascinating because she ruled for so long.
For sure. If you could go back and give your 18-year-old self some advice, what would that be?
My advice would have been to find a way to live overseas for a couple of years.
That's a good one. We have not
I
heard that
never
one.
had that opportunity, and I just feel like if you can position yourself in a company that provides international opportunity,
Yeah,
do it
that's really
once in your
good.
lifetime.
That's cool. I haven't gotten that answer yet. That's a good one. If you were given $10 million tomorrow, just personally, no strings attached, what would you do with it?
I would probably purchase some real estate to rent it out. I would diversify it. I would invest it all. I would invest it all and I would live off the income that I create from it. And then I would really focus on, what's my, after I love my job, I really do, but like what am I going to be passionate about when I retire?
Sure.
And then I would, start building that business, and
Right,
it's
right.
probably going to be something travel related for me. But like, start to really put together a plan and put a pool of money aside to start building on that plan. So 10 years from now, I can launch into something that would be really fun for me.
Nice.
Oh,
That's
and I would
awesome.
travel a lot. Like, I would have a pool of that to like, I've been to like 40 countries.
Oh, wow.
I'm a
That's a lot.
huge believer that you should travel somewhere you've never been. I use points and miles from travel credit cards, and I've got I'm loyal to one airline and two hotel chains, and I've got credit cards associated with it, so I can travel really, really well economically.
Nice. That's
So you
awesome.
kind of make your business travel work for you and
Nice.
gather those points and miles, which is a really cool thing too.
What's a challenge that you're facing in your professional role right now?
So the challenge is we are in a really crowded space with
Sure.
sponsors that have been out there longer and
Yeah.
that have more assets under management. So what how do you differentiate yourself?
Right.
How do when you're dealing with an RIA that gets 50 phone calls from different sponsors every week
Right.
and they just ignore all of them, your emails, how do you create a personal connection?
Sure.
But we're trying to get really creative about breaking out into that. And then making sure we have things like our first loss protection that make us unique.
Sure.
So it's really like that's the thing with money raising is if you're in a sea of similar funds
Yeah.
with others that have longer track records, more assets under management, how do you set yourself apart?
Sure.
That's a big challenge, and we think about it every day.
Got it. I typically lead with this question, but I skipped it. But I'll ask it now. What's one thing that people misunderstand about you personally?
I think that people look at my life and they think she must have been raised in a really great, she must have had a really great childhood with a lot of advantages that were given to her. I think if they don't know my story, I think people don't make any assumptions that that's not the life that I had and that I got to
Right.
start not based on really hard work for me and
Right.
positioning myself very carefully, but that life was easier for me and that's why I'm where I am today.
Right. Got it. If you could try any career that's not related to what anything you've done, what would that be?
It would be travel related. I really so many people come to me. They're like, I've got a million American Express miles. Like, what do
Wow.
I or points? What do I do with these? Because they just don't know how to use them. So like I've helped so many people plan amazing trips. So I don't
That's
know, that's
awesome.
fun for
Yeah.
me because it
Yeah.
adds value. Like travel to me is so important. So it's like
Right.
if people can have these memorable trips, once in a lifetime trips that
Yeah.
become every couple of years where you think it's once in a lifetime, but if you learn how to use the currency,
Yeah.
you can travel a lot more.
Yeah, that's really good. Back to your professional world. You mentioned how you like to operate with integrity. What's something that you've seen in the real estate space specifically that's controversial and, where people maybe aren't operating with integrity?
Well, I think that all the advertisements that you see, especially on social media, that are promising these crazy returns,
Right.
and then there's also, I think, a lack of integrity when people are advertising gross returns
Oh
and they're
yeah, for
not
sure.
building in anything in relation to what do you actually get from the investment, and they're hooking people in. And there's too many people that are out there that are just in this whole mindset of get rich quick, and they make really poor decisions. And there's always going to be people out there wanting to take advantage of people like that.
That's a great answer. Looking forward, what are some emerging challenges that you think real estate investors should be on the lookout for, whether they're passive or active investors?
I think that diversification again is key because, like, did anyone expect the tariff threat, the extreme tariffs, pulling it back,
Right.
threatening it, pulling it back,
Right.
market volatility,
Or
political
COVID, whatever.
challenges. We just don't know,
Right.
what can come out of the woodwork that could in COVID, office buildings. A really
Exactly.
great example. Who expected a pandemic and
Yeah,
who
no.
expected everyone to have to work from home and then the office buildings sit there empty?
Right.
So, it's diversification is key across lots of different asset classes of real estate,
Sure.
just because you
That's good.
cannot predict. Even nobody has a crystal ball, but it's even like more, we're more at risk of political changes than we probably have ever been before.
Right.
And that
That's
can
true.
definitely impact certain sectors of real estate.
For sure. All right, Mariah, what is one question that you wish I'd asked that I have not asked?
I think you did a great job. I can't think of
I
one.
asked that one just so that I get a compliment. No, I'm
Yeah,
just
see?
kidding. Just kidding. Where can our listeners find you online?
So the best way to find the company is lucrom.com. So it's LUKROM.com.
Okay.
And then my name's kind of a different spelling, but you can reach me by email. It's MERRIAH at lucrom.com. Or you can just go on our website and my email's on there.
Fantastic. Anything else you want to mention before we wrap up?
No, this was fun. I really appreciate you inviting me.
Thank you for joining us. I really appreciate your time. I know it's valuable, and we appreciate the listener for spending your time with us. And please head over to our website. It's Adversity to Abundance, the number two, adversitytoabundance.com, and check out other episodes as well. And please share this episode with a friend. We appreciate it. Thank you all. Take
Thank
care.
you.
Thank you for joining us on From Adversity to Abundance. We hope today's episode has equipped you with valuable insights and practical advice to elevate your real estate journey. For more inspiring stories and resources, visit us at www.adversitytoabundance.com. If this episode has inspired you, please share it with a friend who could also benefit from our conversation. Together, let's turn adversity into abundance. Until next time, keep building your mental fitness and your real estate empire.
All right, here's the deal. You work hard for your money. Isn't it about time you put your money to work for you? If you are an accredited investor, check out LabradorLending.com. Our Integrity Income Fund provides monthly cash flow from an investment backed by hard physical real estate. Our income fund, which is uncorrelated to publicly traded stocks and bonds, invests in first lien mortgage notes diversified by geography, property value, and borrower type. So you're not investing in one project. You're investing in a diversified portfolio of first lien mortgage notes. Our Integrity Income Fund aims to pay its investors monthly distributions at a preferred rate of return of 8% annually. Possibly the best part, though, the fund showcases a short 12-month commitment. So you can invest your capital today and have access to that capital in 1 year. Check it out today, LabradorLending.com.